Tango Tango Papa 1792, November 8, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Bordentown, New Jersey. So let's see. I unloaded, early this afternoon at Pleasantville, New Jersey. I'd picked a load up at Baldwinsville, New York, and so that was last night. Took that to Pleasantville, New Jersey this afternoon, and then I had to kind of race over to South Brunswick, New Jersey. Excuse me, and then I picked a load up that goes to Fresno, California. So sort of a longer load. I haven't had a load this, it's going to be about, I don't know, let's say 2,800 miles, maybe some change. I haven't had a load this long in quite some time. So in any case, it has to be out there sometime Thursday. So I should, you know, barring any unforeseen problems, should be able to make it. So, but it's kind of funny. I had to, the way that the load came across on the Qualcomm, it said I had until 5 o'clock Eastern time to get there. And so I called the place, and apparently this is a pretty good sized place. And the gal tried to she sent my call back to the shipping department. Of course, it went to voicemail, and no one ever called me back. And so in the meantime, I was trying to get there before 5 o'clock because I was wanting, I needed to buy fuel. The truck was kind of getting a little bit low on fuel, and I wanted to buy fuel. So if I would have stopped here at Bordentown on my way to South Brunswick, I wouldn't have been able to make it by 5 o'clock. Well, as it turns out, so I didn't stop. I kept on going. And so as it turns out, they were there after 5 o'clock. But I got there about 4:45, and it didn't take them too long to load the load once I got there. So I came on back to Bordentown. So in the meantime, this truck, fuel gauge, I know, has never been really accurate, because I can fill the thing up and drive maybe just 50 miles and it's already dropped by a quarter. It's not really very accurate in that sense. But it was clear down to the point where it was, the light was coming on. You get down to one-eighth of a tank. Then the little light will come on. So the light was coming on, and sometimes it would go off, and it was kind of, moving around a little bit. And it did that for a long time, because it was on the way over there is when the light came on. And, it came on when I went past the Bordentown exit when I was on the way over to that place. And so I made it over there, and once I was there, I actually stuck a piece of metal down into the fuel tank on both sides, both fuel tanks, one on each side, and I had several inches of fuel down in the bottom of the tank, so I knew I could get back, even though the gauge was showing that it was just almost empty, and the light was on and what have you. It's got a little LED in the fuel gauge that comes on if it gets down below an eighth of a tank, and so I knew that I had enough fuel to make it back, and as it turns out, I did. once I made it back over here, this Petro is where I was supposed to get fuel at, so I made it back over here, Bordentown, New Jersey, and as it turns out, the tanks actually are, they're 100-gallon tanks. That's what it says on the side of each one of them. It says 100 gallons, so I can have, you know, that adds up to 200 gallons. And so, you know, it took just under, I think it was like 149 gallons to fill both tanks up. So if, you know, I would assume, you know, you can't ever fill a tank up to 100% of its capacity. So I'm assuming that I must have still had 40 to 50 gallons in the tanks when I got here. So I could have gone farther. But then I did, but I don't like to, you know, kind of get in that kind of situation. But since I really didn't know if, you know, and that woman, when I called her back, I said, does the shipping department go home at 5 o'clock? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they go home. Well, as it turns out, the guy in the office does, but the people that are actually checking the trucks in and actually loading the loads, you know, they're still there. So I don't know how long they stay there, but they were there well after past 5 o'clock. So, and the place is a pretty good size. It's actually a factory. So, but I, you know, I don't know. I would not. It's kind of nice that I know that the thing is really off as far as the fuel gauge goes, but I wouldn't want to rely on it. I wouldn't want to get to where I relied on it, you know, so that I could run it that low, you know, low enough to make that light come on. Don't want to do that, so. But had to do it today, and now all is well. Live happily ever after until tomorrow. So, anyway, what I have, I've got some comments that I can play, and I also I've got some other audio that I found. And in the last podcast, I was talking about, or you know, I played those files, those different files, and you know, and of course I've talked over and over and over again about how easy it is for someone to be brainwashed, and that's all of us, every single one of us to one extent or another is brainwashed. Now what does it mean to be brainwashed? In that one file that I played in the last podcast, the guy says, you know, the KGB agent, he said, all you have to do is, you know, one of the steps is to, first step is to demoralize people. Get rid of their morals. Make them hedonistic. Destroy their morals. And then once their morals are destroyed, once they've been demoralized, then they can't distinguish reality from fiction. They, you know, in other words, people become suggestible. And I take it a step farther. You know, you become, this is kind of a sliding scale. The more depraved you become, the more demoralized you become, the less genuine identity that you have, God-given identity that you have, the more enemies you are with your conscience, the more suggestible you become, and you become sort of a sponge to the outside, a sea of all alike. I'm okay, you're okay. And you can form to outside pressures. And so this first piece of audio I'm going to play, it's got this guy talking. His name is Alan Watt. And then I don't remember the name of the second guy. And then they kind of come back to Alan Watt. And towards the end, and they have an old, I guess it must have been a radio interview of Aldous Huxley that wrote Brave New World, which that's a classic book, by the way. If you've never listened to Brave New World, there's audiobook versions, and it's well worth listening to. And then finally, this ends with this experiment. You know, what's the guy's name? It was something Ash, Solomon Ash. Solomon Ash did these classic experiments where the way they set it up, they had there's actually one experimental test subject that was a legitimate test subject, and then the other people that were participating in the experiment, there were like five or six other people, were plants. So they were actually part of the experiment, but they were pretending to be subjects. And so the idea of the experiment, you know, the guy had, it was very simple. He drew lines on a piece of paper, large lines on a piece of paper, and then they'd hold them up, and then, you know, and they were told to, tell, you know, whichever one was the longest or whatever. And so the first two or three sets that were correct, you know, and so they'd start on the end. And so the fifth or the sixth guy, I don't remember which, was actually the one that was the test subject to see how he would react. And so, you know, they'd call off, well, it's number one, number one, number one. They'd go down, you know, around the table until they'd get to this guy, and then he'd call off whatever he said, and then there was one other person that was participating in the experiment after him that was also, part of the experiment, part of the control. And so the idea was that after about three times, then all of these other people that were kind of part of the experiment, they started calling off saying that lines were longer when they weren't. And so the object of the experiment was to find out about peer pressure, group pressure. And so the fellow that was actually, in this film, and you'll hear it, and you can find it on YouTube, just look up Solomon Ash, A-S-C-H. This guy, clearly could see that it was wrong. You know, he knew that it was wrong, but he went ahead and did it. Said whatever anyway, because everybody else in the group said it, and he was really feeling he felt like he had to do it. He didn't want to stand out. And then also they talk about towards the end of that, they talk about if he got the guy to write his answer instead of call out the answer, but write the answer down, the person would be much more likely to be truthful, write what they really thought versus what they, because if they had to call it out in public, they had a tendency to just a good chunk of the time just go along with whatever the group said, even though they knew it was wrong. And so it's sort of an experiment to find out how you can pressure people. And so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play that. So here that is. And it's pretty interesting stuff. And it's this stuff is true, very true. Now, of course, I contend that, they're looking at it as this is just the average human. This is the way people are. Well, it may be the way people are, but they shouldn't be that way. And what makes them that way, what makes you have to be suggestible, what enslaves you to suggestibility, is your own resentment, which is your own wanting to play God. We all have it. We're all under a compulsion to do it. We have a proclivity to do it. And we do that through resenting and then being proud of it, becoming enemies with our conscience, so on and so forth. And then you become subject to groupthink. Peer pressure, groupthink. And so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play this. So here we go.
Most people still today think that all entertainment to do with movies, drama, is therefore nothing more than their entertainment. It never, ever was that case.
Of course, Television can't perform such miracles as this, yet. But perhaps there's no harm wishing that it could.
The greatest social messages are promoted through movies and drama, high drama, through the fixation of emotive sequences, emotional sequences, not logical, factual sequences, but pushing points across in an emotional way which register and fix in the mind. So emotional content is very, very important, rather than going through an actual discussion or an argument using logic and facts. There's no debate. And when you're being downloaded through fiction, your guard is down. The sensor part of your brain is not in action. It isn't saying, yes, I agree with this, I disagree with that, as you would in a debate or a lecture. You're actually in an alpha state, being completely downloaded with new ideas. About 100 years ago, this big organization with many branches, they wanted to rule the world, basically, using Britain as a nucleus of a system, an embryo, which also was going to be joined with the US under the Anglo-American establishment, wrote about the kind of culture and the changes of culture over a 100-year period that they would actually design, implement, and bring in. And H.G. Wells talked about it too. He talked about arenas. He says arenas could be put up across the world for sports, for instance. Now, at that time, sports was something that children, school children were into. Adults became adults and got onto adult things. So it was unimaginable at the time that people could actually believe that there was even a need for adult sports and entertainment, never mind having arenas built across the world. But he said, we can do this, and foist basically a sports culture for the males. Using a tribal system, we're all tribal to an extent. That's why we even bother to vote for a tribal leader. This is well understood. That's why we're supplied with these leaders. And because the average man was to become more disengaged from his own destiny, as the expert class arose, it was decided that the males would get their outlet, basically, gradually becoming helpless as males through sports. Therefore, they'd have a tribal team they could identify with. They could cheer them on as they were winning. In their own personal lives, they were getting nowhere. They were getting disenfranchised, in a sense, as experts took over decision-making for them in all kinds of fields. So this was psychology at use, planned before they even implemented the sports.
That's why they pay athletes these fantastic salaries. I was listening to the radio the other day. They just contracted to pay one player on one team $6 million a year. Can you believe this?
And why is that?
It's the Roman circus. What does the emperor do when the people become restive, and when the people are asking questions, and when the people don't like the policies of the emperor? He sends them to the circus. He creates a circus. He builds a giant coliseum. And he begins to throw the Christians to the lions. And he has great chariot races and football games and basketball games, all to keep the idiots preoccupied with things that don't mean anything in the scheme of the entire world, so that they don't have the time to learn what the truth is, so they don't ever get smart enough to learn how they're being manipulated. So they don't ever question the emperor. That's why they pay a player on a football team or a baseball team $1 million or $2 million or $3 million a year. It is the Roman circus. I know men who don't know anything in the world except who plays third base for the Mets, and they think that's a great accomplishment. And they meet and pat each other on the back and bond and go have cocktails and talk about what this guy that plays third base for the Mets did in last night's game. It's sad. It's really sad.
When radio came along, of course, they used that to the maximum. Sports for the men, soaps basically for the women. And then in came television. As I say, with its alpha state, its hypnotic state. And sure enough, around the 1960s, really, 50s and 60s, it took off. It really, really took off. And men became glued on Saturday nights to the sports shows. A culture industry, which is called by its own the culture industry. The Soviet Union had a department called the culture industry. Their actors and directors were called the cultural leaders. Leaders. Because they would, like a computer, people are like computers, all you have to do is keep giving them new updates every so often, and you can change an entire country or a nation or a block of nations who are all getting the same uploads, upgrades at the same time along certain paths. Today we call it political correctness. Most people want to belong to their peer group. They want to be the same as everyone else when it comes to opinions. In fact, they judge their own personal sanity by bouncing ideas off their neighbors and friends who will answer back and agree on these same topics in kind. It doesn't matter if the topics or what you're given are facts or utter nonsense. As long as everyone agrees at the same time, you'll say, well, I'm sane. And your friends will all agree because they've had the same information given to them. If it's on TV and a famous face says something, then it must be true. He doesn't have to show you facts or anything else. You've been brought up with these faces. That's why they keep these guys on television into their 70s and 80s. You've grown up with this father figure who's on television every night at 6 o'clock in your house, in your room, staring right at you. And he's a father figure. Would he tell you a lie? So you naturally never suspect him. And this same man will lead you through new topics. He'll introduce experts on the topics. They'll have the little summary at the end of every talk, and you are now left with the conclusion that's presented to you. You don't arrive at it. It's given to you, and it's good enough for you. We're programmed today perfectly, just like machines. We tie this in with the Brzezinski. Brzezinski said in Two Ages, now this guy was way up with the NSA. He's a master geopolitician. He admits he works in 20, 50 year periods to do with geopolitics in other countries. But he said himself, the public will shortly be unable to think or reason for themselves. It was meaning by that the form of information that was given to them, the type, the formulas that were in use then in the 1970s, he says, eventually they'll be unable to think or reason for themselves. Eventually, he said, they will expect the media to do all their thinking and reasoning for them. Well, that's happened today. That's why people today can't think outside of the programming from television.
Is there any room in a kind of society where these manipulations are not taking place for this type of entertainment or any type of entertainment at all?
If people understand that a game is a game, if people understand that nobody, no matter what they do, is worth paying $2 or $3 million a year for, people should be able to get rich if they want to. Mm-hmm. By the sweat of their individual labor, okay? By going out and doing something for the world. Mm-hmm. Not by taking people's minds away from the emperor. It's a game. Football's a game. Football's a game. But let me tell you something. When 150 of the most powerful men and women in the world can meet in secret in Baden-Baden, Germany, and plot the fate of billions, and nobody even cares about it. But six football players go to lunch together, and it's in the headlines across the country. You have a reflection of the society in which that exists. And it is a sick, sick society that is doomed to self-destruction.
So based on that scenario, there's some truth into what these men are looking at.
Absolutely, and that's what makes me so sick. Is that I'm trying to wake up a people who on a daily basis are proving the ones that I'm warning them about to be right.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that even though a minority, there are people out there that you recognize are awake to this, if they don't do something about it, they will lose that ability to be free in that way.
That's correct.
Whether they might think, well, I don't need to worry about it because I know what I know and I'm fine.
That's
right. It doesn't work that way. There's a connection here to everything.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. A nation of people who are willing to send their sons and daughters that they profess that they love to a foreign country to die, and they use the excuse to themselves that they're sending them off to defend our country, and they know damn well that's a lie, are doomed.
This is a scientific dictatorship, which Bertrand Russell said, and the Huxleys said, both Aldous and Julian Huxley said, they would bring in the scientifically controlled society.
Well, now, in regard to this problem of the ultimate revolution, this has been very well summed up by the moderator. In the past, we can say that all revolutions have essentially aimed at changing the environment in order to change the individual. I mean, there's been the political revolution, the economic revolution. In the time of the Reformation, the religious revolution, all these aimed, as I say, not directly at the human being, but at his surroundings, so that by modifying the surroundings, you did achieve, at one remove, an effect upon the human being. Today, we are faced, I think, with the approach of what may be called the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, where a man can act directly on the mind body of his fellows. Well, needless to say, some kind of direct action on human mind bodies has been going on since the beginning of time. But this has generally been of a violent nature. The techniques of terrorism have been known from time immemorial, and people have employed them with more or less ingenuity, sometimes with the utmost crudity, sometimes with a good deal of skill acquired by a process of trial and error, finding out what the best ways of using torture, imprisonment, constraints of various kinds. Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. This is seems to me the ultimate in malevolent revolution, shall we say. And this is a problem which has interested me for many years, and about which I wrote 30 years ago a fable, The Brave New World, which is essentially the account of a society making use of all the devices at that time available, and some of the devices which I imagined to be possible, making use of them in order to, first of all, to standardize the population, to iron out inconvenient human differences, to create, so to say, mass-produced models of human beings arranged in some kind of a scientific caste system. A number of techniques about which I talked seem to be here already, and that there seems to be a general movement in the direction of this kind of ultimate revolution, this method of control by which people can be made to enjoy a state of affairs which, by any decent standard, they ought not to enjoy. The enjoyment of servitude.
But an experiment is not a public opinion poll. It examines behavior under the pressure of social forces, as the experiment of Solomon Asch reveals.
The experiment you'll be taking part in today involves the perception of lengths of lines. As you can see here, I have a number of cards, and on each card there are several lines. Your task is a very simple one. You're to look at the line on the left and determine which of the three lines on the right is equal to it in length. All right, we'll proceed in this order. You'll give your answer.
Only one of the people in the group is a real subject, the fifth person with the white t-shirt. The others are confederates of the experimenter and have been told to give wrong answers on some of the trials. The experiment begins uneventfully as subjects give their judgments.
Two.
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 Three.
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 But on the third trial, something happens.
Two.
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 The subject denies the evidence of his own eyes and yields to group influence.
One.
Ash found subjects went along with the group on 37% of the critical trials. One. But he found through interviews that they went along with the group for different reasons.
One.
One.
They must be right. There are four of them and one of me.
One.
This subject's yielding is based on a distortion of his judgment. He genuinely believes that the group is correct.
One.
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 Two.
One. Two.
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 I know they're wrong, but why should I make waves?
Two.
In this case, the subject knows he is right, but goes along to avoid the discomfort of disagreeing with the group. Here, the distortion is at the level of his response.
Two.
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 In the previous experiment, the naive subject stood alone against the group. In this variation, Ash gave the naive subject a partner, here seated in the third position, who also gives the correct response.
One.
One.
Two. One.
Two.
With a partner, yielding drops to only 5% of the critical trials compared to 37% without a partner. Although subjects report warmth and good feeling toward the partner, they typically deny that he played a role in their own independence.
Two.
The partnership variation shows that much of the power of the group came not merely from its numbers, but from the unanimity of its opposition. When that unanimity is punctured, the group's power is greatly reduced. Sometimes we go along with a group because what they say convinces us they are right. This is called informational conformity. But sometimes we conform because we are apprehensive that the group will disapprove if we are deviant. This is called normative conformity. The strength of the normative factor is shown in another variation carried out by Ash. In this variation, the subject is told that because he had arrived late, he would have to write his answers. Subjects in this private response experiment are exposed to the same amount of misleading information as other subjects, but they are immune from any possible criticism by the group.
One.
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 And this enormously reduces the pressure to conform. Conformity drops by two-thirds.
Two.
Ash's experiment is a classic. It reveals how people will deny what they see and submit to group pressure. It allows us not only to observe conformity, but to study the conditions that increase or reduce its occurrence.
Okay, so there you have it. And again, they approach these things with the idea that this is how people, all people are this way. Maybe there might be some variations in people, their suggestibility, but all people are that way. And a lot of people use that same excuse. Well, everybody else is doing it. That makes it right. If everybody else goes off the cliff, are you going to go off the cliff too? But it's not right. You should not be suggestible. You should not be, feel pressure to conform to what the groupthink is. You should not be influenced by the group. You should be able to see for yourself. And this is a, you know, if it applies to us today in a myriad of different ways. Global warming, anyone? Why, the consensus is, the scientists say, we have science. Scientists say that man-made global warming is happening. And you can't disagree with it. You're an outcast. So on and so forth. And it's just groupthink. Peer pressure. And if you don't think that the people that are sort of running things, there are people that know exactly, they know all of these things about, they're running this scientifically. They are using your character flaws, because that's really what enables you, that's what causes you to be suggestible. They're encouraging character flaws, and then using those sort of expanded character flaws as a means of, scientifically controlling people. Making you into whatever they want you to be. None of us have an original thought in our heads. It's all been programmed. It's all been thought out for us. So what's the answer? I mention it once in a while. Go to my website, truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. That'll take you to a page where there's, there's four or five files, MP3 files that you can download. You can play them on your computer. You can burn them to CD, put them on your iPod or, other portable MP3 player. Those files will teach you how to meditate. And it's a very simple meditation technique that's designed to help you practice keeping your point of awareness, because one of the things that sets us apart as human beings is that we have this point of awareness, whatever that is. We have this point of awareness that is separate and distinct from our thoughts. We are not our thoughts. We have this separate point of awareness, and you can actually, if you practice this meditation, you learn to do this meditation, it will prove to you, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that you have this point of awareness, and this point of awareness can simply be aware. You can be aware of the thoughts, you can kind of watch the thoughts go by. You are not the thoughts. Whatever we are as human beings, we're not our thoughts. But the average person is so caught up in thought, they think the thought is themselves. They think that those thoughts are them. That's their identity. And it's not. And so through this, you practice this meditation, and it's not going to happen overnight. You're not going to be instantly saved. There's no such thing as instant salvation. But it's a process of learning to become objective. Becoming more and more and more objective. And then you can think for yourself. The more objective you can become, the more you're able to sort of make friends with that guilty conscience that you've been running away from, that you've been driving a wedge. Someone's been using that guilty conscience against you in a scientific manner to keep you enslaved, to keep you locked permanently into the groupthink. And so this meditation technique can help you if you, but you have to want to become aware. You have to want to become objective. You have to really want to know the truth. You have to really want to find your creator. No one can do it for you. The groupthink is not going to save you. You know, you can think all day long that if you just go along with the group, that everything's going to be okay. You're going along with the group knows best, so on and so forth. Well, it doesn't. You go right over the cliff with them. So, but that meditation is there on my website, truckertompodcast.com. Give it a try. I can't promise that it'll help everybody, but it will help. I do believe it will help most people, but you have to want to become aware. You have to want to know the truth. You have to want to become objective. And then you can begin to see these things for yourself. And not because I'm telling you, and not because I just played, audio, where people were telling you the truth. But you'll be able to listen, and you'll be able to find these things out on your own. You can discover the truth for yourself. And that's the only way that the truth ever means anything. That's the only way that anything ever means anything, if you discover it for yourself. You have to be able to discover it for yourself. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play. It's been a while since I played any of Scott's podcast or Scott's comments. And so I've got a couple here I want to play. And Scott's website is podteacher.com or podteacher.net. I think it's podteacher.com. So anyway, here is Scott.
A couple of real quick comments on this podcast. This is an older podcast, so I'm going to try to work my way up to the newer ones. And you're talking about how people are like dust being blown around, and stuff being blown around with the wind at Kmart, There's a Kansas song on that. Have you heard it? All we are is dust in the wind. When you were saying that, all I could hear was that song kind of come into my mind. I said, gee, I wonder if they were thinking of Tom. Of course, that was a long time before you were doing this. And then you were talking about how people on these talk shows call in and you can't change their mind. I've talked about this many times, Tom. And, it's difficult to change almost anyone's mind. Very, very difficult. The reason is that most of the things that people do are based on their emotions. He's talking about how much logic he would use to prove them. Well, I've tried that with many people, and I think you have too, using logic to try and show them something. And then they'll get right to a point where, you've showed them all the logic and they've painted themselves into a corner. And sometimes they will get right to the point and say, look, I don't care what your logic is. You're not going to change what I believe. They'll actually come out and say it. And so other people, there's lots of people who will not come out and actually say that and admit it. And there's some that will. But the truth is that is because emotions rule all. Because if you ran your life all by logic, then, we'd be probably very logical little robots running around out there. Probably a lot less than human. What do you think? Would that be a good thing for us to turn into Vulcans, as portrayed on Star Trek, that are purely logical and get rid of all the emotions? But that's what it is, Tom. Emotions rule. Just like they do in animals. We think we're better than animals. We're not. In animals, it's their emotions that rule everything. They're not logical. They're instinctive, but they're not logical. They're all based on their animal emotions. And human beings think we're a lot evolved from that, but you know, when in the places that really count, we're nearly, not nearly as evolved as we'd like to think we are. Catch you later.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. Again, if you're separated, because, you know, there is such a thing as a God-given identity. There is a God, and we're, you know, we're in this world to sort of find out where sin leads. And, of course, it leads to directly to enslavement. And, you know, we're here to find that out. And we're here sort of, in a sense, to, as some of us are here, to find our way out of that. But you have to want to, and that seems to be a pretty rare thing, it seems to me, for someone to really, truly want to become objective, to really, truly want to know the truth, and to be able to find the truth. So, about anything, sort of bore right in and find the truth about anything that you're curious about. So, but if you're separated from that, you know, from that God-given identity, because then all of a sudden it's a guilty conscience. You know, this guilty conscience is making you feel bad. So you want to run away from it. Well, you know, what are you going to run away from it into? You're going to into emotions, into groupthink. Find other people that will agree that right is wrong and wrong is right, and so on and so forth. And you don't even realize, people don't even realize it, that they're doing it. It's really an insidious thing. So, but, you know, going back to what the KGB guy said, in the previous podcast, that audio that I played, the KGB guy being, you know, the defected, him being interviewed, he said that basically step one is to demoralize people. You know, demoralize the population, do it through the school system. Demoralize them. It takes 20 years, is what he was saying. That it takes about 20 years to, you know, for, you know, one generation to the next, before you've got them sufficiently demoralized. Once they're demoralized, they can't think for them. They can no longer think for themselves, and they're easily manipulated. And if you're easily manipulated, that's the last thing in the world you'll ever admit. Come up with all kinds of excuses as to why you know, you did this or you did that. You have all kinds of excuses, and you know, they can either be logical excuses, or they can, you know, they can be based on emotion or whatever it is. But we all sort of suffer varying degrees from the same issue. So, but you have people that systematically, you know, they know these things, and they're taking advantage of it. They're taking advantage of the fact that people are so suggestible, that they can be made to be so malleable. Take advantage of it. Rule the world. There are always people that want to rule the world. They're like germs. Who do you blame? Do you blame the germs? I blame the population. I blame people. I blame people for not having morality. But that's it's all kind of a part of a design. And you know, if you're God and you create the world, and you know that Adam is going to fail, going back to the Adam and Eve story, you know that Adam and Eve are going to fall, And so then you utilize that to kind of get, you know, how do you create out of that? How do you create creatures out of that experiment? How do you create the results, you know, the creatures that are able to love you, that are actually able to realize that they're created, and yet they're able to actually, the creation actually wants the identity that comes from the creator, that can appreciate, that can actually love the creator, and not in a wind-up robot way. So anyhow, I've got another comment here from Scott, and he's talking about Boy Scout change of policy. So here we go. Here's Scott.
Well, hey, Tom. It's the first time I think I've left a note for a podcast for you in a long time this way on using this recorder. But since this is what I've got and I'm listening to the podcast, I thought I'd do it. Subject at hand is the Boy Scouts change of policy as it pertains to sexual orientation. And this lady, Nancy, I guess her name was, came in and read the letter, and I'd heard that this had happened, but I hadn't actually heard the details. And I think it's an interesting way they've sidestepped around this. Now, you know, I'd been led to believe that the Boy Scouts was related to some particular religion out there. I forget what it was. And if that was the case, it would be hard to believe that this sort of thing would happen. But maybe it never was, and it's an old wives' tale, or maybe they've distanced themselves from this religion. I don't know. I do know that when I was in the Cub Scouts, I never got to the Boy Scouts. I lost interest. The Cub Scout pledge had God in it, you know. To do my duty to God and my country was a part of the pledge. Do my duty to God. Well, can't do that if you're an atheist. So it sounded pretty religious to me in that regard. In any case, it was interesting how they sidestepped the whole issue of having to take on and say, look, the Bible says that, you know, gays are bad, God doesn't like them, and therefore we don't like them, and we're not going to let them in the Boy Scouts, because we can do that, because we're a private organization. And that's kind of the way they always felt. But now they're saying, look, whether or not a kid is gay or straight or none of the above, at the age that they would be being in the Boy Scouts, the morality that we believe in, and this would be true, a religion would state this, says that any sexual activity whatsoever is not correct at this age. They shouldn't be having any. And if they are, then they don't belong in the Scouts. End of story. So, you know, in a manner of speaking, they didn't loosen things up at all when it comes to sexual orientation. Because where before, oh, you gay? No, you can't be in the Scouts. You know? Oh, you're heterosexual? You can't be in the Scouts. Because how would you know if you're gay or you're heterosexual unless you've been trying? Well, I guess you could say, yeah, I am, but I'm celibate. But I could just see it now where somebody gay gets into the Scouts. And just like the former situation for years here, there'd be heterosexual males in the Boy Scouts, and they'd be having sex on occasion. Nobody'd say anything about it, but because that would have gotten them kicked out, I don't know. But, they'd just be quiet, and they'd be allowed to stay in and have the fun. But now, if there was somebody gay in there with them, and they found out, oh, he's gay, he's having gay sex, and they want to get rid of him because they don't like him, so they tattle on him. And he says, oh yeah, well, I happen to know that X, Y, and Z over there are also having sex with, B, C, and D girls, you know. And now, they basically have all ratted each other out, and they all get kicked out. So it probably made the situation even more intolerant than what it would be before, because you just know this is going to happen, either while they're joining, or, you know, they're going to rat people out, or after they've joined. You just know that's going to happen. So, I don't know. And then, I'm pretty sure that Boy Scouts goes right on upwards to 18 years of age, and then probably beyond that you're an adult and you'd be expected to graduate. If you wanted to stay in the Boy Scouts, you would then graduate to being a leader. Nancy probably know more about that, but that's what would make sense to me, that as long as you were a pre-adult, you'd be a Boy Scout, and then as soon as you were considered legitimately an adult, and that would seem to me to be 18, you would graduate to being a leader if you wish to remain in the Boy Scouts. So, you know, Tom, it isn't very realistic in today's day and age to think that kids that are nearly adults are not having sex. Now, if you were to look up statistics of kids age 10 and 11 and 12, you'd probably find a very low percentage having sex. But as you get progressively closer to being an adult, you would find more and more and more and more of them had done it. I mean, certainly not 100%. I don't even know if you would find 80%. But I bet if there were, I know there's statistics out there, I bet you might find 50% of kids that are age 18, at least 50%, have been sexually active in the years before that. So, you know, that's what the reality of the situation in the Scouts is. So I keep wondering, okay, how did this make the situation any better? I guess it made it better because now it's as fair, because now we can boot both of them out. And I have to wonder, what would happen if Boy Scout-wide, they had a way of knowing all the boys, and of course Girl Scout-wide too, and all the girls who were having sex, they got rid of each and every one of them because they're just not what a boy or Girl Scout should be. How many would be left, and what would happen to the financial viability of the Scouts of America if that were to happen? I wonder if there isn't a financial reason for them to want to look the other way. Kind of like ham radio, which for a year had Morse code requirements. And it still is one of the best modes of communication there is in an emergency. It gets through when nothing else does. But because of the internet, it was killing off ham radio. So for the viability of ham radio, they have gotten rid of the requirements for Morse code. They've also given, well, for all federal exams, they give you the questions and the answers. So essentially, anybody who wants to be a ham operator now, have at it, memorize the answers. There is no Morse code. The world is yours. And, you know, could the same thing happen to Boy Scouts? Possibly. Because I think if they stuck rigidly to this new philosophy, they would get rid of so many Scouts that the Scouts would become non-viable. And so, you know, in a way, it was kind of a cop-out. It was just a way of diffusing the issue. It was clever, but only about as clever as in the military when they say, you know what, we're not going to disallow gays to be in the military. We're not going to ask anymore. Don't ask, don't tell. But if we find out, you're out of here. Isn't that kind of what we now have in the Scouts, is don't ask, don't tell? Catch you later.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. Yeah, the society, you know, you're talking about the teenagers having sex and what have you. And think back now to the audio that I just played, where the guy was, you know, where they were talking, or especially that experiment by Solomon Ash of peer pressure. You know, all my friends are doing it, I'll do it too. You know, and so, I don't know. I'm not a parent. I never have been a parent. Never will be a parent. Get that out of the way, right up front. I'm not a parent. However, if I were, knowing what I know, I would not send my kids to public school. I've said that 1,000 times if I've said it once. Nor would I send them to the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts. Why? Because, you know, originally the idea was that the, you know, these kids were all, you know, it was all kind of wholesome and, you know, and that's fine. If you got a bunch of wholesome kids and they're under wholesome supervision, then you want to, then it's fine if they, you know, they're going to do some socializing. You know, and there will be groupthink. But hopefully it's wholesome groupthink. But in this society we're in now, it's not wholesome. The groupthink of the, you know, of all different kinds, the groupthink is generally not very, very wholesome. And so you don't feed your kid into an unwholesome system. It's clearly unwholesome. So I would just bypass. If I were a parent, I'd solve the problem by not sending my kid to the Boy Scout or the Girl Scouts. End of problem. But you know, it's I don't know. I think that at this point, it's just another sign of where our society has gone, and everybody can, you know, is so subject to groupthink and political correctness, and everyone's just kind of a pushover, and with good reason. We've been trained to be that way. Massive changes are afoot. So, anyway, but it shouldn't be that way. But, you know, again, if you find yourself really wanting to know the truth, wanting to get out of it, learn how to meditate. That meditation's on my website. It's there. It's not going to hurt you. And if you find that it helps you, stick with it. It's up to you to stick with it. Because doing it once isn't enough. The meditation itself is not going to save you. If you practice it properly, it has the possibility of bringing you to an objective state. You know, and then it's all up to you. Once you're in a state of objectivity, then it all becomes up to you. So, I've got another piece of audio. Now, I'm going to play part of this piece of audio. It was another video. You know, I found this stuff on YouTube. You know, you just type the right, search terms in, and there's really a bunch of obscure stuff on YouTube. If you can just find the right things, and some of it's kind of interesting. So this guy is talking about brainwashing, and so I'm going to play part of his. He's got these series of videos, and I think he's involved in some kind of church. But at the very first, the part that I'm going to play of this video, he's talking about brainwashing. Excuse me. And he makes some very sort of interesting points, and then I'm going to stop the video. Stop the play because I have the audio to it. I'm going to stop it because then he kind of goes off into, you know, the church, you know, church type topics, and that's really not relevant to what, you know, I was looking for. So I'm going to go ahead and play this. So here we go.
Hello, my name is James Press. Today we're going to be covering the topic of mind control and brainwashing. You can view the notes for this presentation at answersforadventists.wordpress.com. Click resources, documents, and tips to avoiding brainwashing. So let's go ahead and get into it for today. Now, the goal of brainwashing and mind control is to cause a lack of independent thought in an individual. And the reason for that is if somebody's not thinking for themselves, then someone else is thinking for them. For instance, if you're not thinking for yourself and I give you the thought that God doesn't exist, and you accept that, you know, that greatly will affect your life. And it also may affect how you feel. You may be depressed. So if you're not thinking, someone else is thinking for you, that means you don't have your own thoughts. Someone else thinks for you. And that also means that it's going to affect your feelings. It's going to affect how you view the world. It's going to affect your happiness. It's going to affect your whole life. So the whole point of mind control is to cause a lack of independent thought. Because if somebody's thinking, this can't happen. But anyway, so that's the goal of mind control. Now, question for you. Do you think? Just because you have thoughts does not mean that you're a thinking individual. For instance, I might not be a thinker, but I have thoughts because I'm taking them from somebody else and reflecting them. I'm quoting from Einstein or something. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to quote from these people. I'm not saying their thoughts aren't good. I'm saying just because you have thoughts doesn't mean you're thinking. Okay? So think about it. Do you think? Do you actually sit down and reason and judge for yourself? I want to read to you from the book Education 17, paragraph 2. It says this: "It is the work of true education to develop this power, to train the youth to be thinkers and not mere reflectors of other men's thought." So if the work of true education is to get you to be a thinker, not just, oh, that's a good argument to support my belief, let me use that one. No, no, no. Come up with your own arguments. Maybe you can use theirs, but make sure it's right. Don't just assume that it's a good argument. It may be the weakest one out there. I also want to read to you from the same book, Education 230, paragraph 3. Listen very closely to this, because this is going to be covering exactly what I just said. It says, "The education that consists in the training of the memory, tending to discourage independent thought, has a moral bearing which is too little appreciated. As the student sacrifices the power and reason to judge for himself, he becomes incapable of discriminating between truth and error and falls an easy prey to deception. He is easily led to follow tradition and custom." So the education, now she talks that consists in the training of the memory, okay? And it tends to discourage independent thought. But there's nothing wrong with memorizing of itself. The problem is when it's tending to discourage independent thought. Anything that tends to discourage independent thought has a moral bearing which is too little appreciated, because it causes the individual to sacrifice the power to reason and judge for himself. They become incapable of discriminating between truth and error, and they fall an easy prey to deception. They're easily led to follow tradition and custom. So, again, the goal of mind control is to cause a lack of independent thought in an individual, because if they're not thinking, someone else is thinking for them. They're going to follow the traditions of the fathers. They're going to accept the opinions of the church clergy. This is not what we want, because this is brainwashing, okay? Go memorize that statement, by the way. Education 230, paragraph 3. Very powerful. Study that out. A few paragraphs down, it says if people do this, if their independent thoughts are discouraged and they become incapable of discriminating between truth and error, she makes it very plain that they will, sooner or later, be led into deception. Now here's some brainwashing techniques to watch out for. Keeping what we just talked about in mind, these are some techniques that are often used. I find that most of them kind of fit into this. Assumptions. It's one of the most supreme principles of brainwashing to get someone to believe something that's based off of assumptions instead of real evidence. For instance, the atheists are upset with religions and Christianity because Christianity bases its whole beliefs off the assumption that there is a God, okay? And they don't like that. And so they're very opposed to that idea, okay? But when you ask them and you say, okay, so where's the evidence for your belief that there is no God, or prove that there is no God, they can't do it, okay? They're basing their beliefs off the assumption that there is no God. Well, what we want to do is get rid of all assumptions. We don't want to assume that Uriah Smith's logic is right. We don't want to assume that, you know, anybody's interpretation of the Bible is right. We don't want to just assume that the Bible's right. We want to test it and prove it. See if it's really the case, okay? So assuming. Now, let me give you another example of this, how assuming things actually changes how people do things. I studied door-to-door sales. I've done door-to-door sales before, and when they train you, they'll train you to assume the sale upon the individual. So these are the books. This is how much they cost. Would you be paying cash or check? And so you assume that they're, okay, which one do you want to pay with, cash or check? Well, the reality is they haven't decided they're getting the book yet. You're assuming, you're kind of You're basically deciding for them as far as possible that they're getting the book before they ever decided that. Okay? This is not the way to go about literature evangelism or door-to-door sales. Okay? People say, oh, but if you do that, if you don't use this principle, you'll lose sales. And you may lose sales, but I haven't. In fact, I'll say, look, these are the books. This is how much they cost. Is this something you would be interested in? My sales have not gone down, okay? But I'm against controlling people, brainwashing them, manipulating them into doing something that they otherwise would not do. Persuasive reasoning. Go ahead and use that. But don't brainwash people. Don't play mind games with them. Because it's annoying to people, and while they may get your book, they may throw it in the trash because they realize that you tricked them. They never decided to get the book, okay? So, assumptions. Don't assume that the doctrine's correct. Don't assume anything, okay? You have to study for yourself. Now, so assuming information upon people is one method of brainwashing and mind control. Another technique that's used is information distortation. You know, you just lie, basically, about the information. You know, change the statistics around a little bit. Don't give all the details. When you do this, when you distort the information in this way, it's basically lying. The only way to really avoid it and make sure that you're not getting distorted information and you're being brainwashed, the only way to avoid this really is to go deep, study, and do your own research. But again, that's the key. Just always study and do your own research. Don't believe it, people's assumptions. Don't accept what they're saying as fact, you know, because they could be distorting the information. Another one is information limitation. If you limit the options of what someone can believe and what someone can study, then what they're going to believe and study is going to be what they were limited to. For instance, if you live in another country and the only thing you've ever heard of is Islam, then you're going to be Islam, okay? Or you're going to be Muslim, or you're going to be atheist. Or if that's the only thing you've heard, then that's what you're going to be likely to believe. So people can be brainwashed and get to believe things based off of limiting the amount of information they're allowed to have. And this can be done in more than one way. For instance, let's say you go to a Christian school, an Adventist school, and they take all the books out of the library on topics that they don't want you studying. They don't want you studying that religion. They don't want you looking at this different view because they want you to believe all the right things, right? So what is the student going to study and believe? Well, what they are given the option to. Now, people may say, oh, but James, you have to understand, they have the internet. They can go online and figure out whatever they want. That may be true, but check this out. If the students have to study for the test, do their homework assignments, and have any sort of a life, they're not going to be spending their time looking at other views and opinions because they have to pass the test so they can graduate and get the degree. Okay? So if you overload them with work, you're limiting their time, and if you're limiting their time, you're limiting what they have to study because they don't have the time to study it. But don't base any like conclusions. For instance, if you're going to believe Ellen White is a prophet, don't just believe Ellen White's a prophet until you look at the opposing side. Why? Because I'll get to it in just a sec, but the truth can afford to be fair. Okay? You know, how can you make an intelligent decision based off of, well, this is the only side I've seen, but I'm not going to look at the other side, I'm just going to believe this. Well, you're basing your decision off of personal ignorance because you don't see the other side. You don't see the opposition to Ellen White. So you're basing your decision off of personal ignorance because you don't know what the other side is. That's really not a good way to go about things. For instance, let's say I present this presentation or you watch my presentation on the latter rain and how it's present and falling, and you don't listen to anything else. Well, chances are you're going to be you are basing your conclusion off of personal ignorance because you've not seen the opposition, okay? So you need to look at everything. Don't be biased about this. Don't be a hypocrite. If you want other people to consider something other than the Bible, then you should do it too. If you want somebody to consider something other than their beliefs, then you need to be willing to do it too. Otherwise, you're a hypocrite, okay? But there's different ways you can limit information. You can limit the information itself, or you can limit their time by overloading them with other things that they have to do. So those are the three things. Assuming that information is true, or assuming the sale in case of sales. This is mind control and brainwashing. Limiting information and distorting information. Generally, everything falls under those three different categories. Now, I want to give you some examples of evidence-lacking phrases to watch out for. Basically, these are smoke puffs. It's an introduction to a sentence that they're trying to get you to believe it because, for instance, most scholars agree that. Let me just read you the list. It is widely accepted that. It is commonly believed that. Everyone knows that. Most scholars agree that. Even Islam believes that. Even atheists believe that. You just have to understand that. What these are evidence-lacking phrases that are trying to make it sound more true, what it is they say after this introduction. They're trying to make it sound more true because they don't have evidence. Who cares if most scholars agree that the moon is made out of blue cheese? That doesn't mean it's true. Who cares that most Adventist scholars agree that the Little Horn of Daniel 7 is the paper? I mean, most scholars might be wrong. This has happened many, many times, okay? So don't fall for these little phrases.
Okay, so I cut that off because then the religion, he's probably like a Seventh-day Adventist, which is, he's kind of going off into the religious part of it. And, kind of arguing over they're talking about the doctrine and so on and so forth. And he's kind of gotten away from the brainwashing part. What I found very interesting, the one thing he said about, the door-to-door book sales, assuming for the person that they're going to buy it, making the assumption, here are the books. Will you be paying cash or check? Here are the books. This is how much they are. Will you be paying cash or check for that? that type of thing. And they do the same thing. If you've ever, gotten a call from the telemarketer, they go through these scripts and, they assume, the scripts make the assumption that you're going to buy whatever it is. And they're designed not to let you get a word in edgewise. So, it's manipulation, but the problem is, should you be manipulatable? Which is worse, the drug user or the drug pusher? The drug pusher is pretty despicable, but without the drug user, the drug pusher couldn't exist. So, while it's, these manipulators are bad enough, the real culprit is the person that can be manipulated. We should not be that malleable. But we are. And it's because we've lost our morals. We are enemies with the very thing that could save us from this sort of this externalized enslavement. So, anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. Hope everyone has a great weekend. I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com. Thank you.
Science.